Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with William D. Eggers and John O'Leary, authors of If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, Getting Big Things Done in Government. And it's a nice reunion of sorts. You guys worked at Reason Foundation back in the 90s when, well, it wasn't quite the organization it is now, clearly, but I mean, it was the farm team. No, but let's talk about the book. First, obviously the error in the title, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, If We Can Fake Putting a Man on the Moon.
Yeah, there are still some
let's clear
some
that up right
there,
away.
Yeah.
Talk about the moon program, because that, I mean, it's the controlling metaphor of your book. Was the moon program a success, or in what ways was it, in what ways was it a failure?
Well, we look at things not from the decision whether or not it was a good idea to go to the moon. We look at, in the book, is did government successfully execute on what it set out to do? And by that criteria, the moon, the Apollo program was a success because in 1961, Kennedy and Congress said, we're going to go to the moon by the end of the decade, and they clearly got there. So by that criteria, it was a success. And we look at some of the factors that made it a success and compare it to actually some more recent failures from NASA.
Which would be roughly everything after the moon landing?
NASA has absolutely struggled as an agency since then. The Columbia and Challenger disasters we look at in the book rather extensively. But we also actually just look at the advantages that James Webb, who was the main administrator throughout most of the 60s, had because it was largely a startup organization. And he was not encumbered by many of the personnel and administrative rules that the people who run NASA today are burdened with.
One of the traps that we talk about in the book is called the overconfidence trap. And very often, they'll talk about government programs and they'll put a certain budget on them. And they'll say it's going to end in 3 years and we'll finish it. And oftentimes, it's almost always cost overruns and time overruns. And what Webb did to avoid that was when Kennedy originally said we want to put a man on the moon by 1968, I think it was, and Webb said no, it has to be by the end of the decade because he wanted to build in that time. And when they originally put their cost estimate on, he knew that they were prone to kind of the overconfidence, and so he doubled.
Yeah, he roughly doubled the estimate.
And so they
came pretty close. Yeah. So they actually met the hoped-for budget.
Talk about a recent example of a big government project that is just a total screw-up, a total quagmire. Let's not even talk about foreign policy because we could be here all time. But, I mean, what's a good example of...
People have asked us, what is a big success in recent history? And it is difficult to look at large government undertakings. It's easier to look at things that didn't go through. Immigration reform of 2006 failed to become reality. No Child Left Behind in 2001 clearly hasn't been a success. You wouldn't necessarily describe it as a total fiasco, but clearly didn't deliver the hoped-for results. I think that the foreign policy issues, the Katrina is sort of a poster child. Boston's Big Dig is the largest infrastructure project in American history. Horrible cost overruns.
What if it is that the point of these projects is not, and this is kind of a public choice or an occult reading of government activity, the point of the Big Dig or the point of No Child Left Behind isn't to actually improve education, it is to spend money. It's to come up with a plausible pretext to just employ a lot of people and spend more and more gobs of money.
I think both sides make the mistake of they have what we call Tolstoy syndrome or confirmation bias. They don't let diverse viewpoints in. They don't let criticism come in. And they basically have this sort of tunnel vision. And what ends up happening there is you have a bad idea, and you're never going to be successful if the idea is bad in the first place. And I think, you know, one of the things that we point out in the book that it's both, you know, the left and the right that make those mistakes, because we've also seen a lot of failures in recent years of market-oriented small government downsizing initiatives that failed, and the ideas may have been great, but their execution was poor.
So talk a little bit about what goes into the proper planning and execution of a good idea, of a big project that gets done well. Part of it is, I mean, the idea has to be good.
Yeah. One of the things we do in the book, which sort of violates the rule of writing about government undertakings, is that we look at both the policy development side of things and the implementation bureaucratic side of things. Generally, you write about policy and politics, or you write about public management. And we looked at the journey to success, the journey starting with an idea and going all the way through results, as being a continuous journey. And when you take those two apart artificially, you'll lose a lot of insights that you gain by looking at them as a continuous process, because a lot of the failures that we see in implementation have their roots in poor legislative design. I think California electricity reform in the late 90s is a great example of that. It cost Governor Gray Davis the governorship, in essence, and yet it had been passed unanimously by the legislature and signed into law by Governor Pete Wilson. And yet Davis was the guy when this plan blew up. And it wasn't really implementation failures. It was really the design failures that then expressed themselves during the implementation phase.
So in that case, you need a workable design that's going to stand up in the real world.
Right.
And oftentimes we do these designs just to get them through the legislatures, and they don't work in the real world. That's a big problem. You need to make sure when you're going through Congress or a state legislature that the idea doesn't get so distorted that it's not going to work. You need to have, you know, a good launch for this. And another thing that we found was most of these successful initiatives, whether they were small government initiatives or big government initiatives, were characterized by what we call the bridger. Someone in the bureaucracy who is really good at bridging the public and the politicians, the political side, and the bureaucratic side. And essentially, they knew the public sector terrain, which is so different than the private sector, and they could navigate that terrain. If you don't have someone like that, it's very, very difficult to be successful.
What's a good success story?
One of the things we point to is in London, they instituted congestion pricing, which basically means you charge people to drive in downtown London during work days. And the thing that we found interesting about that was that it was implemented. This is a market-oriented reform, in essence. It's a difficult one politically to sell.
But they had their socialist mayor.
They had a socialist mayor.
Red Penn sell it.
For environmental reasons, use these market-oriented approach that, you know, Milton Friedman and other sort of economists would say, yes, that makes sense to allocate resources more efficiently. Bob Poole at the Reason Foundation has been advocating this sort of thing for a long time. Another success in a similar vein was acid rain reduction from the 1980s, which used a cap-and-trade model, and it was a combination. It was developed by an economist, but it again uses market mechanisms to take on environmental concerns. And the interesting thing I find about kind of both the California electricity was called electricity deregulation.
Right.
And it was based on this market approach of choice and competition is going to drive electricity prices down. But if you design that poorly, you can get into enormous difficulty, which California did.
Which did. I mean, they limited the market. The deregulation produced a document that was a foot high.
Right. And in the same way, the cap and trade that was very successful in the 1980s doesn't mean that something else that's called cap and trade is going to be successful. It's all in those design details that if those aren't right, if the markets aren't shaped correctly or the incentives aren't aligned, you can have massive problem.
How important is it to make sure that that government is only doing certain types of things? Because this is, you know, in a libertarian organization, it might even be that the government could do certain things efficiently, but it shouldn't do them. But then typically government takes on too much stuff.
Well, you know, there's actually two different ways of looking at that. The first one is simply from the standpoint of take ideology out of it completely. But what we heard from a lot of the senior executives in government that we interviewed and that we surveyed was that they actually believe that when government is trying to do too many things, then there's a lack of focus on getting these big things right. And so, you know, what we talk about in one of our traps is we call the complacency trap, essentially. And that's when we have a lot of programs and systems and agencies that have built up over time and that we continue to essentially do those. We haven't reevaluated them. We haven't looked at them. And we spend a lot of time and energy managing those and a lot of managerial talent. And that then distracts from getting some of the more important things done that we think. So take away ideology completely, and you have some real operational problems from failing to reexamine government.
Choosing wisely is a critical step. And so I think that it's essential that we do make good choice about what we ask government to do. And I also think that understanding how government works, which this book looks at, can only enhance our decision-making in terms of making those choices about what we ask government to do.
I want to thank Bill Eggers and John O'Leary, authors of the great new book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, Getting Big Things Done in Government, for talking to Reason TV today. I'm Nick Gillespie.